Well, if you're listening last night, you know, on Coast to Coast AM, we were struggling with bringing this baby in on just two engines out of the four we usually go with for these special ISDN lines we use. And I want to thank Matt and Daniel and everybody else over at the technical side of Premier for working so hard on a Sunday afternoon to make sure that the lines were up and running and going the way they should be. That was a lot of diligent pain in the neck work. And to whomever the person is that down the line at Quest was also working with us, thank you for that. And thank you to all of you too last night for what I turned out to be a really interesting show about Dracula and about Sherlock Holmes and about some of the other things that are related to the contradictions of the Victorian era. We're going to do history a little bit differently tonight on Coast to Coast AM with Howard Bloom. Now, Howard, as you know, is a researcher, a guy who spends a lot of time following an idea around in his head. And he started in the last couple of weeks sort of tracking the history of economic crashes, looking at societies whose basic economic infrastructure was being threatened by inflation or deflation or by other factors like we've seen recently, Wall Street running away with itself or completely doubting itself, consumers losing confidence in their own economy. And what Howard Bloom did was go back over the last couple hundred years of history, look for these economic teeterings, and then try to see what happened around that. What happened that originally, you know, precipitated the conflict, and then what did the government do or not do that either encouraged a greater decline or eventual economic disaster, or what it did to help prevent that from happening. And since that's the way so many of us feel, I think, you know, we kind of have to go back a little bit and see what's worked, what hasn't worked, what should we not be spending so much time, but most importantly, money on right now. And Howard Bloom is going to do that coming up next hour. Look forward to your interactions with him too. Howard is somebody whose research on a variety of subjects often takes him into the curiosity about what would bring around World War III, and that is part of where his studies are taking him on this one. What are we looking at? What are some of the bigger stakes involved? Who are the players? Where are the invisible hands at work shaping our future? And Howard will tell us more about that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. We'll do open lines for the rest of this hour. Special announcement, I'll put it up on my blog too, but something that harkened back to a couple of callers in the first hour of last night's Coast to Coast. We'll use that to kick off open lines for this hour next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Okay, so we'll get to the open lines here coming up in just a second. We'll line them up while I pass something along in just a minute. Have you been to the website tonight? See a couple of really cool stories. Is it the greatest video footage of a UFO ever captured, or is it CGI? You go see for yourself, Coast to Coast AM. Also, while you're there at coasttocoastam.com, you'll take a look at the that deer from the island of Sumatra that was thought to be extinct. You know, scientists were 100% certain there weren't any left. And now they have a photo of one. And that just goes to show you over and over again, we are always convinced 100% that something can't be true, that something isn't happening until just before it does. So we are always, I think, reminded here on Coast to Coast AM just the importance of keeping an open mind. In fact, that's just what I want to talk about real quickly before we get to the phones, and we'll pick up your open line calls for the rest of this hour. Is last night I took a few phone calls from some people who were expressing fatigue about living in complicated times. One caller expressed his cynicism on staying optimistic in his interactions with others when tempers are hot and trigger fingers are itchy. Many people are concerned that it will never get any better, that somehow we have turned a corner where hostility is the new norm and civility is out of fashion. considered a sign of weakness or something. Emotions, one caller pointed out last night, seemed so heightened politically and socially that he was unsure how we could, as a nation, survive October, never mind the outcome of the election. And while I'm paraphrasing those sentiments, it reminded me of how somebody slammed me the other night in an email and a posting on a website. Somebody, I think he called himself William, contended that I won't let other people express opposing views. This, of course, to me, is beyond ridiculous. I love opposing views, new points of view, changing my own opinion, as well as discourse that leads others to change theirs. I've built my career on it. It has served me well. And every single day I have been on the air, and this goes back to even my days as a disc jockey, I've invited and cherished opinions on any subject other than my own. But what I won't do, never have, and never will, and I think this is important, is the more I thought about that caller's thoughts last night, is to what we can't do is allow somebody else's pure emotionalism to take over a phone call or a show, especially here on Coast to Coast. I think the same thing should be true in all of our discourse, wherever it is. Be passionate, great. Be confident in the rightness of your opinion, fine. But at least as far as I'm concerned, if we can't express our opinions without making it a personal attack on the person with whom we disagree, then we ought to keep it to ourselves. If it turns into some ad hominem attack all the time, then what's the point? I mean, if we're so worked up in our frustrations, our angers, our resentments, that all we can do is lash out and swing, try to dominate others so that every conversation that we have is a sub, no, better yet, call it a zero-sum game where there's no middle ground, no mutual respect for being humans or fellow citizens, then I think we lose even when we win. So I just want to say being in dialogue with somebody with whom you disagree means resisting the impulse to invalidate the other person before they've even had a chance to speak. Don't start a conversation with your charges about who you think they are. Don't dehumanize the person you're speaking with by trying to define them as crazy or un-American, the enemy, or somebody who's not worthy of your respect because, frankly, if they're not worthy of your respect, why are you even talking to them? I mean, if for example, you don't respect me enough to have a conversation, then don't bother calling. I'd love to hear what you have to say, but it's got to be a conversation. And I know that stakes are high and that many people feel the coarse scratchiness of their backs up against the wall. But there are lots of reasons to keep our cool, right? To keep our ears open, our minds from shutting down, to keep our volume in check. And for the purposes of this discussion real quickly, before we go to open lines, I'll just mention one of them. One of the reasons why we should do that. It's the Coast to Coast way. Resisting the impulse to just reject each other or to invalidate your conversation partner is the way we try to do it here on Coast to Coast. And right now that's a dual challenge in these very inflammatory times. First order of business, to refrain from the rudeness of the closed-minded, the usual, laundry list of negativity, the usual kitchen sinking that goes on sometimes on other radio shows, and just, try to get out of that for Coast to Coast. And at the same time, let's export that free thinking, the conversational, the deep, the alternative thinking that is the hallmark of Coast to Coast to a world that I think right now has forgotten how to think out of the box, how to talk to itself, how to reimagine its own future, or how to reassess how we even got where we are. And we are in a state, there's no doubt about it. So I just say, again, I think it's the free man who is not afraid to go to the end of his ideas. That has been how we define our discourse here on Coast to Coast. Tonight may be an example of that, again, when we get to Howard Bloom coming up next hour, because Howard's going to maybe push us in some directions, looking back in the last 400 years, close to 500 years of these economic cycles. So be patient and let's have a conversation about it, because I think the world needs us here, all of us from coast to coast. I think the world needs us. So let's not lose our way before we can help others find theirs. And with that in mind, let's go to the phones. The rest of this hour, open lines before we get to Howard Bloom. Take a look at those cool stories online at Coast to Coast AM. And Steve is just outside of Chicago, east of the Rockies on C2C. Steve?
Ian, how you doing?
Well, where are you going to take us?
First off, you guys got the best show on the radio, just so you know.
Yes, for George. And George, I'm in my George sandwich all the time. And for everybody else that puts it together, we say thank you. Yes.
All right. My question involves, I heard on the show that supposedly there might be a mass UFO sighting on the 14th, which would be Tuesday.
Right. There's a story on that online right now at coasttocoastam.com for people who don't know about Blossom Goodchild. Right.
All right. I was just wondering if you possibly know anything about that, if you could just mention something about that or...
Well, sure. I mean, the story's right there. Theoretically, it's a sighting that's going to come on October 14th. The whole world will see it in one form or another. I almost hate to overhype these things, because if it's true that it's going to happen, then it will be well documented and everybody will see it, and there'll be lots of people with cell phone videos and everything else.
Yep.
But traditionally, you know, when we talk about something big happening and then it doesn't, well, then what? So a lot of interest generated by the claim, just to fill you in, that a large UFO will intentionally make itself be seen. A woman living in Australia says this information was conveyed to her through ESP. She says that representatives of the Federation of Light contacted her via mental telepathy to communicate about the October 14th event. To some people, Goodchild's name may seem highly questionable or even ridiculous. It says here, according to the story that we've linked up to, according to Goodchild, the craft will present itself so that it can be seen and demonstrate to humans that other beings exist and are visiting Earth. She says that the UFO will be visible for 3 days. And they come in peace and love. And then this is the part that some people find a little, you know, dodgy. Goodchild has clarified one point of the message she claims to have received. The beings contacted her, gave her the word Alabama. But she says they did not explicitly say that that would be the location of the large craft's appearance, Alabama. Alabama states that they told her, we give you the name of Alabama. There you go, Alabama. At this point, until we know otherwise, roll tide. West of the Rockies, Patricia in San Francisco on Coast to Coast AM. Patricia?
Oh, what a pleasure to speak with you, Ian.
Thank you. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I have a couple of questions. One, you said last night that the 29 market crash was Black Thursday, October 24th.
I was reading from Wikipedia. Yeah, that's one of the dates.
Yeah, Wikipedia has kind of a bad reputation.
Oh, I understand that.
I was curious.
I read the paragraphs from Wikipedia about the buildup to the crash. And there's a Black Monday, there's a Black Tuesday, there's a Black Friday. There's three different dates that are associated with the crash. Each date represents a significant fall in the market in 1929.
Okay. Well, the other question is for Mr. Bloom later.
Sure.
I was thinking about how he's going to be on this afternoon. And, also, your statement is so brilliant that you made before you went to open lines. Absolutely wonderful.
Good.
Kindness, compassion, love is what we need. That's great.
We're kind of living in that post 9/11 world still a little bit, and I think we got to tap into that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, generosity and kindness are the antidote to anger and upset. So if people wanted to practice generosity, they might find themselves feeling happier than if they let go of anger. You know.
Well, I totally agree, and generosity has as much to do with how we give our time as it does to how we give our money. And thank you for that thought, Patricia. First time caller line, Jeff is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff?
Yes, sir, Mr. Ian. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Is everything well?
Yes, sir. The code word, remember, is Alabama. So UFO coming up.
I'm waiting.
You're close.
And it brings me to a couple points, if I may have your attention for like maybe a minute, please, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just like the lady said before, you know, when I heard you on the, you know, just talking, Coast to Coast is special. It is like a like that beacon up on the hill. It is a venue and what's the word I'm looking for? A carrier for free thought. And most of us on the station that come and talk are open-minded and caring people, and we are not angry. And I believe that the anger you might have experienced was probably a plant or a shill. Somebody, I don't know why, would do this, trying to, like, you know, be the, you know, the squeaky wheel or whatever, trying to upset the, you know, the congruency and the good nature of Coast to Coast. The other point I wanted to make is this. I sent you and my brother sent you a letter about, I think it's time for an intent practice here or massive prayers and intent on the part of your listeners. I really think it's time for us to like have a positive effect on the country and try to counteract the negativity that's going on. I'm not trying to force anything. I'm just trying to like, would love to get a bunch of people together at the same time and wish, you know, good fortune and positive feelings and vibes on the country and help to bring up its vibrational level. I mean, I think we really need that bad.
I appreciate those thoughts. And I think let's just say this. If the prediction is right on the UFO appearing over Alabama, at no, or wherever, whatever Alabama means in this UFO story about October 14th.
Yes, sir.
I think we could find the world will turn to us. The world will turn to Coast to Coast because we will have been the only radio show and the only group of people who have been talking about that. And not that it is going to happen, but we should stay open to it. Thanks for the thoughts. And let's go. Open lines. Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut on Coast to Coast AM. Bill?
Yes, hi, Ian. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Let me get right to it. First of all, this relates to what I'm going to say. Weren't you the guest host when the guest was talking about the fourth turning? Do you remember that?
Neil Howe has been on several times, but I had him on within the last 5 or 6 months or so, yes.
Okay, now, concerning what he said about the fourth turning, and this relates to I'm for Barack Obama and think he can get us out of the fourth turning, what I'm going to say now, which I fear would make the fourth turning even worse from the Republican side, George Bush's side, or the Israelis, I'll explain. I fear there might be, I don't know, but I worry there could be an October surprise, meaning George W. Bush would this month bomb Iran, or if with ties with Israel, have Israel bomb Iran with us supporting him. And the point is, Iran's response to that, I fear, would be bomb all the oil fields, especially in Saudi Arabia and the whole Middle East, which would turn the potential recession we're going into a depression, as well as immense inflation, because gas prices, for example, might be $10 a gallon or $20 a gallon. This is all to supposedly elect John McCain, which I think would backfire. It would help even more Barack Obama win.
Okay, you got to take a breath.
I hope it does not happen.
All right, we all hope you're wrong, too. Let me just say, I want to say thank you. I know that there was a time, Bill, when you were kind of compulsively calling Coast to Coast, and I'm grateful that you have been keeping that in check, so thank you.
Thank you.
I know that that took an effort on your part, and if I remember correctly, you were getting some help with that to try not to be so compulsive in your need to do that. And I hope that we're not talking about some sort of international collusion to bring a terrorist attack to either, you know, an ally or to our own shores just to win an election. I don't think that McCain's people would do that. I don't think that Barack Obama's people would be colluding with international people either. I don't believe that. But I understand how you feel, and other people are scared of what might happen between now and Election Day. But we are almost halfway through the month. And so far, so good in terms of where we stand and that we will have free and open elections, despite the predictions of many in November. And I think that that's still a sign of hope. Again, Howard Bloom, though, coming up after the top of the hour. Maybe that's what Howard says, too. I don't know yet. I mean, you never know with Howard Bloom. We'll hear his thoughts about where he thinks this is trending based on the cycles of history and who has done what in the past with a potential economic collapse. Howard Bloom doing a ton of research. He's got a stack of papers coming up next hour. I think you're going to want to hear his conclusions. Coming up on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. There's a link up on our webpage at coasttocoastam.com where there's a story talking about how some of the stock market crash has to do with irrationality. That there's no other way to describe how things were happening on Wall Street except for a deep mistrust. In the piece that we linked there from fizorg.com, they talk about how investors made irrational choices. Robert Zarater, an economist at a Paris consultancy firm, said that for many investors, the financial sector had become a fearful Pandora's box. What has unleashed the crisis is an overall lack of trust in what organizations say, said another French watchdog group. In times of deep mistrust, a stampede can be triggered by a small event. For instance, if tomorrow some people start to form a queue outside a bank, that can prompt a rush by everybody, especially if the TV cameras show the lines on the evening news. Howard Bloom's going to talk about that coming up next hour. What is rational and what is irrational about some of the recoveries of history? Who has done what to make an economy work? And at times, what have they done which has helped it to fail? Coming up next hour, he will find out maybe whether the past is prologue on Coast to Coast AM with Howard Bloom next hour. More open lines next. Where are you going to take us? You heard the numbers. Now what? On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Well, it's already Monday in many parts of the world, and that's why some of the markets are already responding to Friday's closing here in the U.S. and around the world. And most Asian stock markets are up. As of this minute, they have recovered about half of what they lost in a historically difficult day on Friday. They lost about 7% of their value on Friday in the Hang Seng. Hang Seng index, but they have recovered at least half of that back, and we'll talk more about that coming up. Even the Australian index is up. And of course, gas prices have never fallen more in the history of the 58 years they've been tracking gas prices. Biggest free fall ever for gas prices, which can only help us, maybe the economy. Where is it going to take us? We'll find out coming up next hour with Howard Bloom. First, Steve is in San Diego. Open lines between now and then. Steve?
Thank you. Kudos, as a couple of your younger callers echoed in earlier on your opening statement about
good.
Opposing
Thank you.
Views.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'm a libertarian Democrat, and I listen to Rush, what's his name?
Limbaugh?
Yeah, him.
Right.
To get both sides. And here's a story. And I can tell you one thing. I called every congressional member here in San Diego on that bailout vote. And the only one that let me down was a local Democrat, Susan Davis.
Well, tell me about that. What does that mean?
That means that Brian Bilbray, who's a conservative right-wing Republican, if you will, I'm not labeling him. I know him. I've met him. He voted against it. Duncan Hunter voted against it. Bob Filner voted against it. I believe Boxer and Feinstein did also.
Okay.
The only one out of our local congressional delegation was one Democrat that I supported a number of years ago.
What will that mean for you come Election Day?
I don't know. I'm worried either way, but I do have a challenge for either you or Mr. Bloom coming up.
Go ahead.
Okay, go out tomorrow. You're in the Twin Cities, right?
I am.
Okay, go out tomorrow to your largest gold, silver, platinum bullion dealer.
Right.
And try and buy 100 ounces of silver.
Yeah, I hear that's getting harder and harder to find. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? The demand, they keep telling me, all of the big ones here, they keep telling me, well, the demand is so up. And I said, why is the price so low? It's like below $12 an ounce, but you can't buy an ounce.
Well, I think part of that, too, is the delivery system, right? I mean, in silver, you can buy it. You can buy it in coins. You can buy it in bars. You can buy it in gold. But they may not have produced as much. I was hearing a similar story from somebody else who said, if you can find it, buy it. And the prices are surprisingly low right now for silver, and that it's almost guaranteed to go up from where it is. Whatever that's worth, if that's helpful advice, you heard it from Steve and you heard it from me, too. Don't know whether that's definitively true. And I'm like the last guy you want to take advice from on that. Whatever the bad traffic lane is, if a lane opens up and looks good and I get into it, that'll become the worst traffic lane. If the line in the supermarket is moving along really well, it'll stop the second I get in that line. So I'm probably not the guy you want to. But talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. Maybe silver's an option for you. Rachel is in L.A. on Coast to Coast AM. Rachel?
Hi, Ian, and that means that you're a pure soul whenever that happens to you. But the same thing happens to me.
Yeah, I always and so I always feel bad for the people that follow behind me because I always want to say, don't.
Right.
I'm a jinx. Stay
right
in your line.
Well,
yeah.
And then they follow, but it's a string that'll be successful behind you too when something good happens.
I hope so.
Anyway, my story is this. I grew up in upstate New York, and I had come out to California. My father became terminally ill, and we returned to New York in 1986. 1987, he passed away, and I came back out to California in 1989. And I'm happy living my life and everything. And then the Northridge earthquake came along. What happened to me was at 3 o'clock in the morning, image of my father came to me that must have been, I want to say, 12 feet tall and about 3 feet wide. It was like his whole face was portrayed like a movie, like on a movie screen.
Right.
And it was in the state of, I've never seen his face look like that. he looked as if he was scared. I've never saw my father scared in his life, but it looked like he was just, like, beyond his means. And I had no idea what that meant. And so I was up and, you know, it woke me up. I saw this and then I was like, okay, this is 5 o'clock. I'm still up. And then at 5:20, the earthquake shook. So
interesting.
Yeah, that was a great wake up call for me. And then with this last earthquake that we had a couple months ago here in LA, my house was fine, but my cell phone went crazy. My cell phone was turning itself on and off and on and off.
Was it your dad calling your cell phone?
No idea. Somebody. They just never got through, but they sure had fun with my cell phone.
Well, let us know when your dad comes back for a visit so we can tell people there's more trouble.
He might be on that Alabama.
Yes. I wouldn't even know what that means.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it would take our minds off of everything.
I think so. I think that'll be, you talk about your October surprises. Wouldn't that throw the election right there? Wouldn't that be freaky weird? Anyway, that theoretically we're just, 24 hours away from October 14th? I mean, depending on where you are. So we're almost there to Tuesday. And when we get there, we don't know what time this event is supposed to take place. We just know that it's been predicted and people are buzzing about it. And it would be interesting. Sue, Huntington Beach, California, Coast to Coast AM. Sue, open lines.
Yeah, Ian, thank you so much for reminding us to keep civil. And I think we could also be well advised to keep rational, because I'm hearing a lot of negative talk and panic talk that's only making things worse, because markets, of course, are partly psychological. And even though there's some real problems out there, a lot of it is also panic that's causing it. And there was something else I was going to say. A lot of the measures that have been taken do sound like they should work to alleviate the problem if you look at it rationally. And I think the problem is that people are not looking at things rationally enough. We've just got to stop all this scare talk and unnecessary negativity.
I agree. And the key word is in that is what is necessary. And, you know, at what point is being negative just something that's required to be honest in the moment? And at what point are we just freaking out? And then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that everything will get freaked out as a result. So, you know, we have a few hours to go before our markets open. Good thing we're seeing some recovery indicators from other markets. Back to London for the moment, though. What's really intriguing about that is the British banks are being bought up in part by the government. Some of the banks that are in trouble have done or will do shortly what Henry Paulson originally didn't want to do, but now is reconsidering, and that's the government buying up some banks, buying up perhaps even someday some businesses. You know, and that is a paradigm shift for us here. It is for me. I mean, that's... depending on how you look at it, it's either socialism or fascism, but it's not capitalism. And in capitalism, pure capitalism, you let them fail. As painful as it is, you let it fail. And you know, some people say this is the best way for the taxpayer to be guaranteed something to get out of it in the long run. I don't think those things exist, guarantees. Not in an economy where it's all about what can we do for the moment. I just don't think we're that forward thinking. But I could be wrong, but it seems like we're heading into a very, well, it's uncharted territory. That's why Howard Bloom's coming up in just a few minutes, because he's a good charter for those things. This is somebody called JC, but not the JC, in Memphis on Coast to Coast AM. JC?
Good morning.
Morning.
I've gotten an education that I could have done without. I've been basically chained to Bloomberg for the past week.
Yeah.
And from what I've been able to see on the subject, just about every flavor of economic carrot known to man has been tossed at the investment banking community to no effect whatsoever. These specimens are not about to move an inch until they can not only have their cake, they intend to eat it as well.
Well, is it their cake or our cake?
Interesting question. I say we ought to snatch it out from under them, bypass the investment banking community by means of open auction for short-term operating capital, corporate operating capital. The bid would be for the length of time the money is in use. The return of principal plus proportionate percentage of not less than minimum estimated net profit rather than interest on the loan would allow for greater potential return on investment than compound interest. The rates for minimum return on investment would be scaled to equate with normal interest on commercial paper. Corporations soliciting loans would submit entire operating balance sheet and any additional documentation on internet auction website, such as eBay. And no, I don't have a dime in it.
No, that's interesting. I wish I were smart enough to know whether or not that's a brilliant idea.
The only exception would be proprietary research and development financial data, the absolute minimum to sustain the project. All terms used in loan solicitation documentation by all parties would be defined in plain English. The written predefined agreement signed, witnessed, and sealed by all parties involved means the lender is secured creditor with legally enforceable rights. I'd call that fairly compelling motivation to not default, since if you do botch it that bad, you just handed over the keys to your shop.
Well, that's an interesting proposal.
A little bit more, sir. Open auction is.
We got a lot of people who are trying to get on. So how much more is that you're going to read?
A couple more lines. Open auction is exactly that. Individual syndicates, partnerships, corporations, holding companies, banks, and any other legally definable entities would be eligible to participate.
Okay.
The motivation to return greater than minimum on loan means that corporate America must become a true meritocracy. And last but not least, daily disclosure on the corporation's own website of all financial data other than proprietary. What this means is...
I'm afraid we're just running out of time. It's 3.5 minutes right there. But I appreciate that thought. I don't know whether we'll ever get to a meritocracy. Okay, that was really weird. Just as I was speaking. I know this is going to sound like I'm reading something into it. Just as I started talking there, I hope it's the wind, but my studio door, which was pushed shut, just suddenly flew open. And it felt very ghost-like. Nobody's here, right? Looking around. Look at that. It was really, really weird. Brad is in New Jersey. We'll grab him. First-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM. Brad?
Hello, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Good. We're going to try to get a couple more in, so go ahead.
During the 90s, I worked on an offshore banking island, and I found some very, not strange things, but things that I didn't realize at the time that seemed to pertain to what's going on here today. The island was called Providenciales in the British West Indies, and it was owned at the time when I first went there in 91. There was about 1,000 people, the belongers, who lived on the island. It's up to about 25,000, according to the internet now. But the Sheikh of Qatar owned at that time about half of the island, and it became an offshore banking island. And during the middle of the 90s, there was a direct flight from Washington, D.C. And I'd met, through being there, a lot of, interesting people, financial people. There was a charter from Switzerland that would bring people. And one girl in particular, she said, I didn't realize at the time, but she said that her boss, she was from Long Island, but she was worked for a Swiss bank. They transferred her to Switzerland. And she was on an errand for one of her boss's clients, and she named the name Mr. Rich. And I didn't realize, I thought it was strange, but she
What's the point? Help me understand, just so we can get to...
I have a suspicion that there's a lot of K Street and the politicians are accepting money offshore in Dubai and anybody else who wants to give them... cash from outside of the country, they've pretty much sold America down the drain, and we're headed for a globalist, just pretty much being a cog in the wheel of the United Nations.
We'll run this by Howard Bloom coming up in a second, and we'll see what he says about that, too. I know he's monitoring this as we speak. Scott in Sacramento has been holding on for a while, too. Scott?
Yeah, well, thanks, Ian. How you doing?
I'm well, and you got about a minute.
Okay, I got four guys for you. I want you to respond to what I'm going to say. Seems like Ed Dames is wrong about everything. Even after they said they found the crash, he says it wasn't even going to be the crash, so he denied that. Stephen Quayle, you were going to follow up on him. He made some outlandish predictions, and I don't know, he might have come close this time, but I'll let you say. And then John Fun say that Nostradamus says we are going to fight Persia. I thought that's what he said, that the West is going to go, to war with Persia. I thought Nostradamus predicted that. And then the other last thing was not too far from here is where the guy says that if you get these night vision glasses, that you can see UFOs up there fighting if you get the good quality ones, like grade 4 or whatever. And I've read on the website that doesn't seem to work out.
I have night vision glasses myself. I've yet to see anything through the night vision glasses other than birds. But I saw a UFO with my naked eye once, so it's not that I'm saying that it's not there. It's just It was flying. It was an object. It was unidentified. I keep Stephen Quayle's predictions set right here by my microphone, actually. So I look at those all the time. And we'll leave it right there. We've got Howard Bloom coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll find out what history tells us about our future next. This is Ian Punnett.